Support for KPLU comes from the investment firm of McAdams Wright Reagan, serving individuals, families, public and private companies, and nonprofit organizations, with a mission to enhance the financial security of their clients through analysis, research, planning, and investment. More at nwrinc.com.
I am here in the studio with Terrence Blanchard and his quintet. We are going to have an amazing time. Terrence Blanchard, fabulous trumpeter, performer, composer, composer of film scores, Broadway scores, an educator, a mentor, opera. Well, we'll talk about your campaign a little bit later on. And we'd like to welcome y'all to our studio. Welcome, you guys. It's good to have you here. What are you going to play first?
We're going to play the other... No, I'm just joking. We're going to play Magnetic, the title track.
All right.
Thank you.
You're listening to 88.5 KPLU, our studio session featuring Terrence Blanchard and his quintet. Again, welcome, fellas. And Terrence, if you could just take a moment and introduce your wonderful band to everyone, just give a shout-out.
Sure. On the piano, we have Fabian Almazan. Bass, Joshua Crumbly. On tenor saxophone, Bryce Winston. And drums, Justin Brown.
Thank you. It sounds great. Now, you are, as you know, you're a five-time Grammy winner. The first one was with Art Blakey's Jazz Messengers, yes. Which I always call like the University of Art Blakey Jazz.
A lot of people.
That's incredible place for so many great players came through that. Mm-hmm. What did you learn from Art Blakey? Because I know you're a great educator and mentor of musicians. What did you pick up there that you always pass along?
Well, I mean, one of the main things he always talked about was just being honest. You know, he always used to say, never speak beneath your audience or above your audience. Just speak straight to them. He always talked about the whole idea of just working hard, being on your game. You know, I remember I was talking about something one day. I said, oh, man, I'm working on this thing. And he said, yeah, you better be working on something all the time. And I never forgot that. The main thing that he instilled in all of us is that it's very important for us to search and be honest about who we are so that whatever we perform is something that's real, you know, for people to hopefully get something from.
Beautiful, beautiful advice to pass along to anyone. Thank you. So clearly, you never stop working on things. particularly, I wanted to ask you about film scoring, because mm-hmm. you're on probably 50, 60 soundtracks and, you know, film scores mm-hmm. and 40 or more composed yourself. And so much work with Spike Lee, too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What is that like to score a film? Do you watch scenes and they tell you the mood or
it's a very rewarding thing. It's very different than this, obviously, in that, you know, you have to write something that's specific for a particular story. You know, whenever I'm working on a film, generally I try to get as much information as I can prior to me starting. So whether that be a script or having a conversation with a director. And then once, you know, they start to shoot, I'm kind of generally out of the picture for most directors other than Spike. And Spike is the guy, he brings me in from the very beginning and keeps me on through the process. When we were doing Miracle at St. Anna, they were shooting in Italy. And as they were shooting, he kept sending me stills back,
wow.
You know, to start conceiving of some ideas for the score. But the thing that's like really interesting about, you know, the film work is that I get a chance to write for larger ensembles or, you know, different types of ensembles. You know, working with Spike and working with, you know, George Lucas, I've gotten a chance to write for huge orchestras,
yeah.
You know, 70 to 90 pieces, you know, and in the case with both Spike and George, you know, we've added choirs to a couple of those scores as well. And that's all given me the experience that I need to step into this other arena of, you know, writing operas and doing stuff for orchestra.
Fabulous. That's what I wanted to ask you about. Mm-hmm. You've written Champion, an opera, and it has, you know, it's been performed, it's been presented, but we might break a little news today because you're starting a brand new campaign to to get it going to a recording on Indiegogo. You got a campaign kicking off today, right?
Kicking off today. I mean, we're very excited about it because
maybe you could tell just mention the opera.
Sure. We're excited about it because the opera was a big thing for us. As a matter of fact, Fabian and Justin both played on the opera. The story is about a guy named Emil Griffith, who was a welterweight champion. I'm a big boxing fan. And in Emil's life, once he became welterweight champion, he beat a guy named Benny Perrette, you know, and he was going to fight him again. And in order for Benny to try to gain some kind of leverage over Emil, in a press conference, he outed Emil's sexuality. Because mm-hmm. a lot of people knew that Emil was gay, but nobody talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he called him, he used a very derogatory term for him in a press conference, and it upset Emil to a great degree. In the process of getting ready for the fight, the night before the fight, Emil had a premonition, a bad dream that something was going to go horribly wrong in the fight, and he tried to actually get out of the fight.
Wow.
And couldn't, you know. And once the fight started, you know, there was a moment in time where he had Benny Perrette cornered in a corner, and he hit him 17 times in 7 seconds.
Whoa.
And because Benny Perrette was a type of fighter, he's like Joe Frazier. He would like to take a lot of punches to try to give one, but it didn't work. And he had already had a fight not too long prior to this fight, so he shouldn't have been fighting in this fight at all.
Mm-hmm.
But those punches put Benny into a coma. He was in a coma for about 10 days, and then he subsequently died. It sent Emil's life into a serious tailspin. As a matter of fact, there was a lot of talk about banning fighting, and, you know, there was all of these commissions brought up about the dangers, talking about the dangers of the sport.
Wow.
But when Emil came back to fight, he couldn't even fight. Whenever he would get an opponent in a corner, he was scared to go at him because of his experience with Benny. But probably the most amazing thing about the story is that Emil suffered a lot because of his sexuality. He was beat up coming out of a gay bar in New York one night. The interesting thing about it, the guys didn't know that he was a fighter, so it wasn't like they didn't receive some punishment either.
Mm-hmm.
But he was beat up very severely. But I was reading his autobiography, and there was something in the autobiography that just struck me, and it stuck with me. It was the reason why I wanted to do the opera. He said that, I killed a man and the world forgave me, but yet I loved a man and the world wanted to kill me. And I thought that was a very powerful statement, and it's still a very relevant statement, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So that's the opera's centered around that entire thing. And Jim Robinson, who's the director of the opera, did a brilliant thing because Michael Christopher, who wrote the libretto, told the opera in a flashback because Emil started to suffer dementia. So we start the opera with Emil going to meet the son of Benny Perrette, which actually happened. You know, and in the process of him meeting him, we see his life. You know, so he's flashing back through all of these moments in his life. And when we staged it, there's some brilliant things that went on where, you know, there's a scene where young Emil is talking to his mother, but the older Emil, his older self, we had three Emils, the older self is embracing him to try to make sure he understands. As a grown man, he understood what his mother was going through, but as a young man, he despised his mother for some of the things that she had done to them.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very powerful story.
It's a great big story.
It's a huge story.
A great big story.
Yes.
And so the Indiegogo project is to get the recording.
The funding for the recording,
yeah.
Because, you know, we had Denise Graves, great singers. Denise Graves, R.B. Ellicott, Arthur Woodley, Robert Orth. I mean, great people. And the thing that was the most amazing about the project for me was that we all felt like we were in new territory, because I know I was in new territory writing for opera, for operatic singers. And for them, there was a lot of room given to them to improvise, to kind of do their thing. And at first they were a little uncomfortable with it, but then they really started to embrace the whole notion.
The opera, they got the jazz.
Yes, of
and
course.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that. That sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm. And so Indiegogo, you can go there and Champion.
Go. Yes.
Would be the project to look for. Mm-hmm. Well, that is just tremendous. You are so accomplished and absolutely delightful to have. The player's fantastic. Can you play us another song?
Sure. What do you got for us?
Here at the studio session, 88.5 KPLU, Terrence Blanchard and his group.
Thank you.